Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, July 6th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
Do you see what I'm wearing? You like that, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do, ma'am. It's all frilly, just the way I like it. Hey, I have an outstanding show for you today. We return to our roots in this series of podcasts called The Erotic Mind. After mining a very rich vein of visual artists over the past several weeks, we come back to the realm of the written word and how this series got started. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to an extremely talented and prolific author from the UK, Ashley Lister. He has a wicked sense of humor and a big, fat, uncut, erotic mind, worthy of our serious investigation, don't you know?
Do you like my legs? Do you? Come here, come a bit closer. Now, I want you to kneel. He's a good boy.
Ma'am, I'm trying to work here. Listen, devoted fans of written erotica will no doubt be familiar with my guest. His work is freaking everywhere. He writes fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. He's a teacher, a columnist, a reviewer, a contributor at the Erotic Readers and Writers Association. In fact, Ashley has an unparalleled pedigree for this series. And we are so grateful that he decided to slum with us. As a special treat, Ashley will share with us two mouthwatering pieces of the fruit of his erotic mind. The first is a humorous erotic verse. The second will be of particular interest to the many swingers in my audience. Don't miss this, people. And for more of Ashley, be sure to visit him on his site, ashleylister.co.uk. Today's podcast sponsor is once again So Hard. So Hard is what we in the business call a boner pill. But So Hard is not just any old Viagra knockoff, no siree. It's a pure, all-natural herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused. Listen, I've tried So Hard, so I can testify to its effectiveness. Look for my review of So Hard on my new product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. And here's a tip. The first 1,000 customers to visit the So Hard online site will receive a free 2-tablet package for just the cost of shipping and handling. Now you can review the product yourself, and you can do so for free. Just log on to the sohardonline.com, create your order, enter the promotional code DD, as in Dr. Dick, in the checkout window, and then click the submit code link. Get your wood the natural way. Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Ashley, and thank you for joining us. It's so great to have you here for this Erotic Mind podcast. And yet another big shout out to our mutual friend, Jeremy Edwards, who hooked us up. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
I would love to. Yeah, hello to all the listeners of Erotic Mind. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, good, good, good. We also have some really naughty people out there. You might want to say hello to them, too.
I always say hello to naughty people first. Sorry.
Excellent. So listen, I've been spending lots of time on your website, ashleylister.co.uk. What struck me first is your prolific output. The notes about you read, Ashley Lister is the UK author of Swingers, True Confessions from Today's Swinging Scene, and Swingers, Female Confidential. Aside from writing erotic fiction under a variety of pseudonyms, Ashley has also written many nonfiction articles on a broad range of topics. He's a regular columnist, reviewer, and contributor at the Erotic Readers and Writers Association. Ashley's nonfiction has appeared in a wide range of magazines that include, amongst others, Forum, the International Journal of Erotica, and Chapter and Verse. Ashley's full-length fiction has been published by Nexus, Shamira, and Silver Moon, with shorter fiction appearing in anthologies edited by several editors, including our friend Rachel Kramer Bussell. Holy cow, that's a mouthful. When do you find time for self-abuse?
Sunday mornings at church, usually.
Well, it's a good time because no one's paying attention.
Yeah, that's what the collection plate's for, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what I've always thought. You are cheeky. I love it.
Sorry.
And I got to say from the get-go that I absolutely love your accent. There's nothing that puts a polish on smut like a British accent.
It's because we're meant to be so naughty, isn't it? In all the films I see that come over from Hollywood, if somebody's a villain, if somebody's going to stab somebody in the back, they'll have an English accent, won't they?
Yeah, well, it's a great foil, I suspect. And, you know, I said the same thing to KJB and James Lear when I interviewed them, too. I think it's, for us Amerikanskis, we just love it really puts us on edge in a good way, don't you know?
Oh, we get really smitten by American accents. They're so rounded and sexy and, oh, yeah.
That would be me, rounded and sexy. So, listen, how many publications, hard copy and web-based, do you have out there? Do you have any notion?
Well, I don't know if it's Alzheimer's or stupidity on my part. I'm not 100% sure. I think I've written about 24 novels, but wow. Some of those have been translated into foreign languages, so I don't know if that counts in the grand total. I honestly can't say how many short stories I've written, although I've had work in Maxim Jakubowski's Mammoth Best Erotica collections for the past 5 years. I've just heard he's accepted a piece for next year's collection.
Wow.
And on top of that, a handful of articles, quite a few book reviews and columns, and the two non-fiction books on swinging as well.
Gosh. This is your lifestyle. You've made a life of this, I'm guessing.
I do enjoy sitting down and writing, yeah. And the first thing that usually pops to the forefront of my mind is write something sexy.
Right. So I want you to make sure that you know that you are welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better.
In that case, would you mind if I broke into poetry now?
Oh, please do.
This is a piece called Viagra, Viagra, Viagra.
I love it already.
Yeah, I've been experimenting with comic verse recently. This one, yeah, Viagra, Viagra, Viagra it's called. He slumped with his head on his forearm. His tears had poured like Niagara. His lips spat a single word curse. Viagra, Viagra, Viagra. He first heard about it through email, a wonderful little blue pill. But now, as he dwelt on what happened, his thoughts made him desperately ill. Can you only last a few seconds? Does your lover think you're no good? Is she always asking for better? Would you like to give her real wood? With their marvellous promises, they wooed him, and he ordered a 2 month supply. As he waited to get hold of his package, anticipation brought a tear to his eye. Viagra, 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 he cried. He believed everything that they'd said. Viagra, 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 he sighed. My pencil will soon have some lead. When they came, he was not disappointed. 60 pills with their promise of joy. He shook as he took the first with a drink and prepared to be a naughty boy. The instructions were clearly printed, but he tossed them aside with a sniff. He knew very well what the deal was. Swallow one and your thingy grows stiff. And it worked just as he'd expected. The effects very soon took their toll. Within 15 minutes of swallowing one, his trousers contained a tent pole. It was then that he saw the main error, a precaution he wished he had took. The pills helped erect his erection, but he still had nobody to share the experience with. He spent 2 long hard months on Viagra. It was a sickening and bitter low blow. He'd purchased an orchestra's worth of the pills, but was playing his melody so low. Tears weren't the only fluid he spurted. The ink from his pen flowed as well. When he wrote to complain to the makers of the fault with the pills that they sell. You should have a warning on the box, he explained. He went on to divulge his true plight. What's the good of putting lead in my pencil? when there's no one to whom I can write.
I love it. I absolutely love it. There's nothing better in my book than funny smut. A little sense of humor along with our sexuality is like the top of the line.
Do you know, that's why I enjoy reading Jeremy's work. Jeremy is one of those people who can put humor and eroticism so close together. And yeah, it's a rare talent, but he's one of those people who can pull it off, for want of a better expression.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So listen, before we get to discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about you. Is Ashley Lister your real name or nom de plume? And if it is, why?
It's my real name, yeah.
It's not the butler's name, but yours.
Butler, yeah, that's one thing that I've got to get hold of. No, real name. You covered the brunt of my biography with discussing the written output. Aside from being a writer, I also teach creative writing.
Wow.
As you just heard, I'm trying my hand at humorous verse. Mm-hmm. I'm married to the lovely Tracy. I've got a wonderful son, Ashley Jr., and a family of dogs and cats that make life interesting and challenging at times.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So, do you find it difficult, or is there any drawbacks to writing erotica under your real name? Or because so many of the people, or not so many, but enough of the people that I've already interviewed in this series have chosen to protect their real identity when they're writing this particular kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can understand that, and to some degree I do. I use pseudonyms for my fictional work.
I see.
My Ashley Lister name, that's gone on the non-fiction work. It's gone on a couple of short stories as well, but they're usually related to the journalistic style of the swinging material that I've been writing about.
Right. Got it, yeah. Interesting. So how did you get your start as a writer?
I grew up believing that I've always wanted to write.
Uh-huh.
Every spare moment I had, I was either writing or reading. 10 years ago, I saw a call for submissions for erotic stories in the UK magazine Forum.
Uh-huh.
I thought it would be an interesting challenge, so I tried that. Story was accepted, proved popular, and it's just carried on from there. I tested myself to find out if I could write a full-length novel, and managed to. The first couple weren't successful, but the editor at Nexus Books was encouraging and offered some guidance. So yeah, it blew up from there.
It's curious to me that one of the universals in this series is that the people who I'm talking to who are so passionate about what they do in creating their art form that they all started as children. The writers began writing as children. The artists began drawing and or painting as children. And so that's a common thread that I wasn't expecting to find.
Yeah, do you think that that's because we're all trying to return to the pleasures of a childlike state and the initial blossoming of creativity that comes out there?
I don't know, but it certainly means that you guys have studied this for a long time. I mean, it's not somebody who comes to this, you know, like in midlife and decides, you know, to all of a sudden become a writer after having not written a thing early in life. I suppose that happens. I just haven't met the person yet, so.
I don't know. I think with all forms of writing, there's some creativity involved anyway. So even if people aren't consciously saying, I'm going to sit down now and do some creative writing, even if they're writing essays at school, writing emails or letters to friends, there's still some creative process going on there. So to some extent, we all have a grounding in creative writing to begin with.
And some people, I know, kind of come to this in a natural sort of way. They're gifted, for lack of a better word. I myself am not so. And so I'm in awe of this. I was talking just recently to another person in this series, Rene Capone, and he was telling me about, you know, as a child he was drawing successfully as a kid. And I said, as a kid, I was eating the crayons. I'm terribly dyslexic, and I didn't find this out until I finished my doctorate. But so the whole word thing is a jumble to me, even now. And so I'm kind of in awe, you know, speaking to successful people in this genre.
How on earth did you cope with dyslexia and studying a doctorate at the same time?
It was not easy, I can tell you. I learned how to play a game, and the game was, we called it education. I don't really think I was educated. I think I learned how to play a game, and I was successful at that. But you know, it was awful. You know, even now, you know, it's bizarre. I wrote a nonfiction. Fiction called The Amateur's Guide to Death and Dying, which was a very long story that precedes all of this, and I could never find a publisher for it, but you know, it was my coming out kind of thing. It was the very first thing that I was able to write that was, you know, to my mind, successful, and it was a brilliant thing, and very cutting edge, dealing with death and dying, obviously, and but sadly, no publisher ever wanted to touch it. It was because it was about death, don't you know? Anyhow, moving right along. most of the erotica that I've been reading is exceptionally brief, yet very powerful. And because of its brevity, every word must count. The same is true for your work, particularly that poem that you just read.
My personal preference for writing erotica is to think of the whole experience as foreplay.
I see.
So if there is a brief sex scene there, it's usually as a culmination after a lot of tension building, a lot of extrapolation as the central characters tease each other, either with verbal foreplay or physical foreplay, mm-hmm. or all the usual associations that you can bring to it. I think because when somebody picks up an erotic novel, they know there's going to be a sex scene in there. It's
being clever and resourceful that they are.
yeah, it's a given that that's going to happen. So it's my job as the writer to tease their expectations, to make them think, oh, it's about to happen now, and then twist it in a different direction, and heighten their expectations, and then surprise them, hopefully.
That's really good. So building that tension, and this is another common thread that I've been hearing from the other authors that I've been chatting with, and they liken their presentations, their work, to the sexual response cycle. You know, there's the arousal phase, and then there's a plateau phase, and then the orgasmic phase, and then the resolution phase. And I think that's an amazing kind of thing. Are you conscious of that when you're writing as well?
I've actually gone and studied linguistics rather than psychology, so I made a big mistake there, really, didn't I? I can see what they mean. Yeah, and sometimes, when you see people starting off writing erotica, occasionally they'll make the mistake. And a good analogy is if I was making a pair of sexy knickers for my wife. Mm-hmm. In that case, if I was writing about the process, I would eroticize the tactile experience,
right.
But I wouldn't necessarily talk about the way the needle is thrusting in and out of the fabric throughout every stitch. Does that make sense? Yeah,
I
think
do,
you got that.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Thank you, but yeah, it's. It's,
I mean, that's
that,
what
yeah.
I would have done, you know, in and out. And that's why I'm not a published erotic writer. There you have it, in short, basically.
Does that make sense?
It
that
does.
Doesn't sound
it's,
like I'm...
No, it does. It's really great. I mean, the obvious, I mean, the amateur, you know, a person like myself would go for the obvious. And that's not necessarily a good thing. So good for you. I mean, that's something really to think about and amend my ways in my own personal journal work and stuff. No more in and out when you're talking about sewing. All right.
Yes.
So, as you know, my primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. Since you are such a prolific writer, are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And if not, what sparks the images that become your erotica?
If you bear me 2 seconds... yeah, because I'm a full-time sexual athlete. Yeah, I'd like to believe that I am.
In your mind?
The truth is, my athleticism is devoted solely to my writing.
Interesting.
If we were going to extend the metaphor where sex is concerned, I'm maybe the sporting equivalent of a tennis player's ball boy or a golfer's caddy. I enjoy the sport, but I'm best suited to being a bystander, whilst more proficient players take centre court.
Yeah. So how do you get into character then, as it were, so to speak?
yeah, good question. When it comes to getting into character, it's because I suppose a ball boy or a caddy, to go back to that metaphor, they're people who know an awful lot about the sport that they're involved with, but they're not particularly pros at the sport. It's getting into the... I suppose, yeah, I have to get into the mind of the pro. More so recently, because what used to spark the images for my erotica were physical description and stretching characters to physical extremes. More recently, I've been exploring the cerebral side of erotica, what actually stretches their limits cerebrally. So it's more about constructing a character who is in a position to be cerebrally stretched.
Oh, you do go on, sir.
Yeah.
I love it. You must be a Brit. Hey, wait a minute. Oh, I'm being too silly, but what are you going to do?
So, you get where I'm coming from.
Yes, I do. Absolutely, absolutely.
Good.
There's a lot of stuff going on in your work, layered, would you say? I mean...
Yeah, I would say that's a good way of putting it. Although the physical side of it, yeah, that's got to be there because readers do have a lot of certain expectations when they're picking up an erotic book.
Yeah.
I'm also trying to make sure that the characters are as credible as they can be, and also to make sure that their journey is something where you think, wow, that's actually happened to this person. And having done all the interviews for the Swingers books and spoken with people who've been through similar journeys, similar journeys to the characters that I'm portraying,
right.
I feel as though I'm able to get a greater depth of character there.
Yeah. Would you agree that there is, at least to some degree, a distinction between like romance novels and erotica?
Yeah, certainly. The romance, I mean, we've got the blend now, the romant-erotica, which, a bit of a mouthful, which...
It was bound to happen.
Yeah, which works well. I mean, romance goes very well with erotica because obviously erotic situations are invariably the culmination of a romantic episode between a couple.
Yeah.
But it's also nice when the two can be separated so that people can have erotic exchanges without necessarily being romantically linked.
Yeah.
Or I should say so the characters can.
Yeah. And the reverse is true as well, you know, that somebody who would just as soon keep their the sexual parts to their reading, you know, alluded to without being overly specific.
Yeah, I've always been worried about that. I think there was... are you familiar with Barbara Cartland, or have you heard of her?
Yes, oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know whether she was just... I didn't know whether she'd just been foisted on us here in the UK.
She's everywhere. It's like the plague. only completely different.
Not that much different. The way she used to sort of like end with a couple going to the bedroom door and then there'd be a crash of waves.
Yes, exactly.
And that was...
the objective, correct.
It's so limiting and it doesn't educate the way you would expect literature of any description to educate. And in some ways, I find that quite worrying that there are a generation of readers growing up who think that they can go out, get married, go to the bedroom, and then they're going to paddle for some reason. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I think you're right. It really does people a disservice because it doesn't educate. It doesn't take into consideration, you know, the messiness, for good or for worse, of actual physical on physical kinds of interactions, and you know that fading to black with you know the sound of strings. Mm-hmm. I don't think human coupling is like that actually, and a lot of people are disappointed when they find out it's not.
Yeah, I mean, most of us are quite delighted when we find out it's like that. But it is, as you say, it's an incredible disservice to the reader. I mean, there are some things that should be left out of novels. We don't need to read every time the hero goes for a poo. Yeah. That's not necessary. But if you've got a romance story where a couple have been working hard to achieve physical intimacy, the physical intimacy should be a little bit more than opening a bedroom door.
That's right.
It should be, bumping uglies and getting squishy, or however you want to describe it.
Right, and there is a bunch of fumbling around. I mean, even you know, even in erotica, you know, there's fumbling around, and
which,
you know, not knowing what to do or how to proceed, and you know, being filled with hormones and desire and lust doesn't necessarily translate into you know a successful encounter.
Exactly. Yeah, and to actually be able to see. I don't know, I do like honesty in the things that I read, and it would be nice to actually read of a couple who don't actually have an orgasm at exactly the same moment.
That's right.
And it would be nice to read of people who do occasionally cock it up whilst they're in the bedroom.
Absolutely.
Which is something that's happened to most of us, some of us, certainly not me.
well, you read about it in a book somewhere, I'll bet.
That's the one, yeah. No, it would be nice, though, to have more honesty in erotica, I think.
Right. Do we have time, I hope so, for you to share another tidbit with us?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yes, of course. This is from the opening to a short story of mine called The 20-Minute Rule. Mm-hmm. Short stories published in Jolie Dupre's Logical Lust Anthology, Swing.
Oh, we know her.
Good. So you know that Swing, collection of short stories about swingers and swinging.
Yes.
Lisa placed a hand on the guy's chest. Her fingers lingered there for a moment, and she savoured the tactile pleasure of caressing a stranger as she worked herself up and down. Unlike her husband, Larry, this man's chest was smooth and hairless. The skin was bereft of the tight clutch of scouring pad curls with which she was more familiar. The flesh was waxed to a gleaming, frictionless finish, as muscular as Larry's chest, but different through a thousand subtle nuances. As her fingertips trailed across to his right nipple, she teased the hard, fat bead of flesh and smiled when he shivered. It was a moment she planned to recount in graphic and exaggerated detail when she and Larry were taking the slow drive home. 20 minutes is up, she muttered. With a conciliatory smile and only a little regret, she pulled herself from him. The thick length she had been riding slid slowly from her wetness. A delicious tremor rippled through the muscles of her pussy as their bodies started to separate. She was aware of the condom's slippery egress from her sex and glanced down at her groin just in time to watch his sheath cock flop unsated from her wetness. His eyes were suddenly wide. There was an expression of dismay slapped across his features. 20 minutes, he repeated numbly. What the... 20 minutes, Lisa said again, still smiling. I told you before we began. She was already standing and glancing around the dimly lit playroom for her purse and thong. The purse was easy to find. The thong was nowhere to be seen, and she dismissed it without another thought. Leaning over him, placing a leisurely kiss against his startled lips, she casually silenced his protests. Thanks for that. It was fun. Her fingers trailed once more over the smooth muscles of his chest, seeking out the hard nub of his erect nipple. and then she snatched her hand away. With two swift steps, Lisa was out of the playroom, leaving the intermingled scent of sweat and sex and the unspent stranger as a memory behind her. Her heart continued to pound from the rush of arousal and adrenaline.
Yikes. Now there is what we were talking about just a little while ago, about unfulfilled. There you have it.
Oh, yeah.
One of the other things that I noticed that you made a point of mentioning wearing condoms. That's interesting. You didn't have to do that. Why did you?
That was, as I say, that was for the Swingers Anthology.
Right.
I was making it as credible as I could. Uh-huh. And, yeah, and the majority of the swingers who I spoke to who were actively engaged in sexual relationships with multiple partners practice safe sex, so I wanted to reflect that. To some degree, I suppose, for a writer, there is the element that there's more that you can describe if it's unprotected sex, but it doesn't reflect the reality, really.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, I mean, you know, a condom, you know, like a lot of other fetishistic kinds of things that people wear, can be eroticized, and, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's unfortunate when we, you know, say that, you know, barebacking is the is erotic and anything short of that or covered is not. I just don't think that that's the case, but there you have it.
I would agree entirely with you. I've heard a couple of ridiculous people say to me, it's like chewing a toffee with the wrapper on. And you just
they're not
think,
doing it right, I don't think.
Yeah, well, for one, I was thinking I'm not going to offer you one of my toffees for a start, because how you're actually enjoying them, I don't know. And